Accession number 19068, Reel 7.
Mr. Ken Chesson, Reel 7. Could you describe your personal feelings with your first experience of combat against the Japanese?
Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes. Well, that really came very much all of a sudden. We knew we were getting near the enemy lines, but came up to this very thick jungle, and all of a sudden there was Japanese firing at us. And really, it was a thing that, in a sense, first time under fire, and you knew then that you was really going up against it. And then it didn't frighten me, but it just sort of stunned you to start off with. And then we very soon had some casualties. Very quick we had casualties, and I think that made the battalion realize that was it, and we were actually in the war fighting away. And the thing was that it took a bit of getting used to. As I've said before, thank goodness it never frightened me. I was lucky like that. It never frightened me at all, but it did stir you up and make you realise that you were actually up against it, and it was you look out for your life. There was somebody ready to take it, and it was a case then of being very, very alert. And of course, with the mules, we didn't move up quite so close as I would have done if I'd been just an ordinary rifleman. But therefore we did have an advantage. We were kept back a bit. The supplies on the mule was valuable. We had ammunition on there, and that was very important. And the thing that was horrible really was when you had your perimeter for the night, you know, you, as the light failed and you took up your positions, and you were sort of in a box, as they would call it. And then if you were on any sort of guard duty around the perimeter, that was a thing that was a bit hectic, because the Japanese, they knew that we were obviously a new division in the campaign, and the majority of the chaps had never been under, probably been under fire before, not in jungle warfare anyway. And they really gave us a lot of hassle through the night. They would come through and make noises and call out, Johnny, where are you, Johnny? And this sort of thing, trying to attract our attention. And of course, if you've got somebody there that was a bit on the nervy side, it would be very easy for them to call out or shout at them or something. And of course, that's the sort of thing that they wanted you to do. And so that was a thing that you had to be very careful of and not get taken in by them, and they we had them where they did come right through. They come through the box, and you know, thank goodness the people, you know, the chaps were very well controlled, and they didn't give away their positions or anything, and we just kept calm, and that, and they come right through. But you know, it could have been quite nasty, and we had times when they did find us, and then they would come in. This was this could be like when the dawn is breaking more and a little bit of light, and they would come, and they had these little knee mortars that it fitted sort of over the knee, and they used to put small mortar bombs in and lob them over to you, and although they were small, they created a terrific lot of shrapnel. They was quite a deadly weapon, really, and that was the sort of thing. But you know, luckily it didn't find it too frightening, and very soon got used to it. And I think with the, like anything else, if you can get settled down to it quite quickly, yeah, and then you can you can cope with things really very well. And I think our battalion did cope very well. And as I say, obviously we did have casualties, and early on we had, you know, we had quite a number, really. But as time progressed, and the we all got more used to that way of going on and fighting, we turned out as good as the Japanese, or better. But it was a bit of a stunner to start off with, anyway.
Did you have any personal experience of keeping guard?
Yes, yeah, squatting in a foxhole or a slit trench. If you was in a foxhole, that was just a circle, you know, and you sort of dropped down in that, and you were on your own. And if you had a slit trench, there was two of you in there, and that would be round the perimeter. But we our instructions were that we just kept quiet. We didn't, and we were under orders that, you know, we wasn't allowed to fire unless, really, I mean, if the Jap came right there at us and was going to, you know, we got to defend ourselves, well then you could fire. But otherwise, if you thought that he was going to pass you by or anything, you just had to hold your fire, and that was a thing where really you had to control yourself very, very well, really. And if you'd have been, you know, a chap was cracking up, or you were a very nervous type, you could do something that would give the game away and let the whole lot in trouble. And that's the sort of thing that they wanted to happen, really. The Japanese wanted to happen. But the real fighting, and that when the bullets were flying about and the shells were dropping, you know, thank goodness was mainly in the daytime and in the daylight. And I think really, well, all warfare is nasty, but one of the things that I hated as much as anything really was when you were under shell fire, and although they used to say to us all, hold back, you know, with your mule, hold back, but you see the shells, they were dropping very often, they were dropping quite fast, and although you got down and you could pull your mule down, it would, you know, they were trained that they would lay down with the load still on their back, not that poor thing's not very comfortable, but they would, and you could lay there by them, which gave you a bit of cover really, but the shell fire was quite frightening.
Were the mules ever disturbed by the shell fire?
No, they didn't. They seemed to take it very well, really. Obviously, you had to make sure that you got hold of them, from my own experience from the warfare, there was very, very little that seemed to really frighten them, when we first had them, and I think what they were like at that time, and the games we had getting them used to the loads and that, but really they calmed down, and they were wonderful really. And I think all the chaps, you know, the riflemen and all the chaps, although they used to think the mule platoon was the scum really, but I think they all appreciated, you know, what was done for them and what the mules done for them.
They must have carried great weights, the mules.
Yes, I forget the loads now, but the mules that we had were not, you know, they were more like about a medium mule. I mean, the artillery people had they had much bigger ones when they used to carry the mountain guns that they used to take to pieces and put them on, and they were a bigger mule altogether than what the infantry people had, but they did carry very heavy weights and they carried them through some very difficult country, there's no doubt about that. I really think they were a wonderful asset, a wonderful animal.
What happened to the casualties, the Japanese casualties?
Well, I think as far as I know and what I saw, I think most of them, they went, you know, by the vultures and things like that.
So would any prisoners have been taken?
A big man?
Would any prisoners have been taken?
Oh yes, they were. Yes, they not too many, but they had to take, you know. Yeah.
When you encountered Zaiwadi, could you just describe or paint the picture what it was like and what you were doing there?
We went out from there. Sometimes we went out just for a day. Sometimes we went out for probably a week or several days at a time. And right out, covering a wide area, going out to villages to see if we could come against any Japanese, or reports came in from the Burmese that there were Japanese ate in these villages, and so we had to go along and see if there was if there really was any abate, and of course they were then on retreat, and they were hoping to get across into Siam, get out of Burma and get into Siam, and our job was going out to these villages, and sometimes we had quite strong skirmishes and killed several Japanese. There wasn't any of them that were prepared to surrender. They just fought and died, and it was a case of making sure that the vast area was cleared up of the stragglers, and the main forces were further on down and they were crossing from the Pegu Yomas and crossing right across there and floating. They got to the Satang River and they just floated down on tree trunks or large pieces of timber or anything, and floated down to a certain point, and then they got into the side and made their way going across to the as I say, towards Indochina, and that is why really we went to the Mauchi Road area, and it was a case then of trying to cut the Japanese off and anyway drive them on out to Burma.
How did the Japanese cope when they reached the Sitang River?
When they got to the river, they crossed, they got the pieces of timber and stuff and floated and crossed, but a lot of the Japanese then was getting into a poor condition. The Japanese that we had been up against earlier on when we fought down to Mandalay, and even after Mandalay, where we came up against them, they were in decent condition and still quite well equipped really, but they they were really on the retreat, and as I say, they had crossed over and come right across and was hoping to get to Siam. A lot of them that we'd killed had got pretty rough, and at one time nearly every Japanese soldier that was killed, and if you looked at his kit and opened up his mess tins, he had had them packed up with rice, so that they'd got food, and they were in a really a good condition. But when at the later stages, they were really a retreating army, and it did show their condition was poor. Some of their clothing and that was very 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 poor, worn and tattered, and they certainly hadn't got the food on them like they did in the earlier days, and it was a case that they didn't find life as easy as they had done.
Could you describe the Madras Sappers and Miners?
The Madras Sappers and Miners? Well, I think their outstanding part really was their clothing. They had the jungle green clothing, very much the same as all the rest of us, but they had these very funny hats that were just, they didn't seem to wear the bush hats. They wore these hats that was just round hats. They went high at the front, and then the top sloped back. It was just a flat sloping roof, really. They could do terrific work, and they did do jolly good work, and the swing bridge that they'd done over the river up the Mauchy Road for us to go across and get the supplies across, where the main bridge, the Japanese kept shelling it, and so therefore they put this swing bridge across for us to go across and took the supplies.
Is that the Bailey Bridge?
And that was just the Bailey Bridge they shelled as well, and until the artillery could knock the guns out that they'd got ranged onto that, and eventually they did knock them out. And then of course it was straightforward going then, but we had this swing bridge that these sappers and miners put up, and I thought it's the only time that I had seen one done in the in the wartime. I expect in other places they had been erected, but it was the only one I'd seen done, and it covered the river was quite a width. I can't say exactly, but they said the flow of the river was 17 knots. The major that was in charge of them, the Madras Sappers and Miners, him and his a lieutenant he had with him, they used to canoe quite a way down the river, and they said that it was flowing at 17 knots, and so therefore I should have thought it was quite a feat of engineering really to put this bridge across, and it was marvellous, and the way they cut out the tracks over on the other side, and so that we could get up there, get rain. It was because it was just going more like against a blank wall nearly, and the animals couldn't they just couldn't stand, they couldn't get up there, and then some fell back into the river.
How was the going at this time in the jungle?
In the jungle, it was very hard going there. That was some of the thickest jungle that I'd ever been in. Really, really bad.
And was it monsoon time?
And that was monsoon time, and it was really most unpleasant. And over the years since the war finished, I know reunions, the Burma reunion up at the Albert Hall up in London that we used to go to have each year, and I met different powers, and that was a thing that always come up was the Mauchy Road and how bad it was, and that seemed to stick in everybody's mind. and it was really a bad going. The monsoon didn't let up, and the jungle was so thick, and we were trying to get to different points to make contact with the Japanese and get rid of as many as we could, and it was as tough as as any of the fighting we had, really. We were very pleased when they said they dropped the bombs on Japan and the end of the war. It was probably a lot of people wouldn't agree, but it was a wonderful to us. It was a wonderful thing.
At what stage did you have an awareness that war was about to end?
we just didn't have any. It came as completely out of the blue, really, and these bombs had been dropped on, was it Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Was that the first thing you knew that?
We didn't. There was no indication at all. None whatsoever. And really, if it hadn't have been for that, I mean, our war could have gone on for a long time, and we would have been, we would have had to fight on into Siam, I suppose, or unless we'd been taken somewhere else, it just wouldn't know. But I think there would have been a terrific lot of Allied service personnel would have been killed. There would have been more killed than what there was by dropping the bombs, I think. And I mean, it's not only the killing, it's the wounded and the casualties would have gone on and been terrific, I think, because the Japanese, they were people that, I mean, they were fanatics, really. I mean, and they would just fight and fight until rather than give in. And it's the bombs to us were a blessing. We were all very pleased anyway to think that we'd cut. It was unbelievable to think that it happened. We had certainly got no idea and that it was going to happen, and it was just like a gift to us, a good gift, and we, being as I say, such the jungle was so thick and the monsoons, the end couldn't have come at a better time.
Looking back, how would you describe your CO and officers?
Well, I didn't think much of our first CO, and he didn't last too long, but Dupree Finch, the colonel, the CO who came, and he was in England. He was in charge of the 6th Battalion, and he came out there and took over the 2nd Battalion. And I thought he was good. And his second in command, Major Twidell, he was good. But we had some the officers are the same as anybody else. Some was very good and understanding, and I'm afraid some, to my way of thinking, they just didn't really understand the men, and some of them I didn't think were very good leaders at all, but they had some, as I say, that were very good. And we had some Australian officers come to us, and